Okay. God, we please set aside everything I think I know about myself, my disease, these steps, and especially you. For an open mind and a new experience with myself, my disease, these steps, and especially you. Tonight, we are here with Pat O. I would like to introduce you for the speaker for the evening.
I'm Pat, I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Pat.
So, first time I was here, Dave asked a question about, how, about the bedevilments and how they were working, because I was describing how the bedevilments were working when I was using, but what it was like when I was sober. And, I mean, I'm not going to get into answering that question, but I talked about this, situation where I was buying a gun from this drug dealer because I was really angry and frustrated over a situation about this kid I was living with. And I feel like I shared that part of the story a lot, but it really doesn't bring justice to what the whole story is. And I think it's because I'm going to start from step 9, talk a little bit about the second part of step 9, talk about 10 and 11, the instructions in 10, 11, and 12, and I'm just going to go through the rest of the book and just point out the things, because I don't actually take my sponsees through the book until we're on step 10, give them the directions, and 11, and I probably will bring them along on a qualification with another alcoholic or new guy, whether that new guy is willing or not, just to kind of get a feel for working with a wet drunk. And then I go from there, talk about to the extra chapters in the back, and then I go from the back to the front again, talk about the forwards to up until how it works, and I kind of show them where all the directions are to the fourth step and onward and forward. And so there's this kid I was living with who his background was, I met him while I was using a couple years before, really when I was progressing through my bottom, and when drugs started getting really bad. Both his parents were opiate addicts, and what happened was both of them took off. He was actually from Westchester, New York, and both his parents split up, but totally split up. But they moved to this area, and they split up. Then they're who the hell knows right now. And he was living at my house because he had nowhere else to live, and he wanted to finish out high school and not drop out and get a GED. So my parents were willing to take him in rent-free for the time being so he could just get through high school, and then we would throw him out. I couldn't stand that, though. And I thought it was because he was at first, now getting sober, I hated this kid for, dozens of reasons. On my four-step, I listed, at least 30 things why I didn't like him. He had a girlfriend I wanted that I had a chance to hook up with in high school. He had just all this stuff. It got to the point where, I was so frustrated and resentful at this kid. I was reaching out to kids who also didn't like this kid and reaching out to their drug dealer to just kind of spite this kid. Of course, I literally approached my sponsor with this idea, and he talked me out of it. I'm nuts, man. That's the type of sick I am. And that's the way I'm, how crazy I am sober, but okay. So I finally hit this, the bottom, the first step, had this first step experience where I was so miserable sober, I had gotten to the point where I had a lower bottom sober than I ever did when I was using. And I finally reached this point where I literally couldn't see my life with or without drugs and alcohol. So then I got to the willingness to go through my first four step. So my first four step took 5 hours, but I pretty much did everything, at least the resentment inventory did everything you would expect it to do. So you get, I have a lot of resentments, A. B, these resentments are horrifying as seen in the second column of how absurd they are when I'm saying them out loud in the fifth step. C, I see in the third column how these resentments are destroying me and putting so much pressure on my life. And D, finally getting off the soapbox in this fifth step for the first time. At my fourth column, I finally realized, I'm not the victim. And I finally, this is pretty much all I got out of that first four step. And then directly from that, I did another four step. And after taking a lot of inventory on this kid I was living with, I found out the only reason I resented this kid is because he could use like a normal person, and I could not. That is it. When this kid came home high and drunk, he had stories to tell, he had a girlfriend, he had a good time, and he was able to pass through school, he was able to get high during school and pass. Dude, when I used, I was getting fist fights at parties, I was leaving parties with whatever money I could, whatever objects I could, just so I could get more drugs and alcohol. And when I get home, I continue to get high and drunk and isolate. Because I'm just trying to get high and drunk to feel normal. This kid was getting high and drunk because he can enjoy it. You know, and he's able to say stop, and then stayed stop whenever he wanted to. And at that point, I finally saw the harms I've caused and all the damage I had done by going through my fourth and fifth step. So now now I'm feeling this remorse, and now I'm feeling this guilt living with this kid, and now I want to make amends. You know, it's not even at this point that I have to make amends. Now clearly seeing what harms I've done, now I want to make amends to this kid. So this weird thing occurred where, like, when my aunts came over, she's nuts, I didn't want to deal with her. So when my friend came home, we walked through the front door. This is the first time I probably spoke to this kid in months. And we went downstairs, and, like, it was just me and him, and I knew God was giving me an opportunity to make this amends, and I did. So what I did was, in going through the amends, you know, I wanted to apologize for some harms I've done. I did, you know, started describing, you know, broadly what harms I had done. I described the nature of the ism and the selfishness and self-centeredness of being an alcoholic and trying to get my way. I also mentioned, I'm definitely going to forget some stuff because I don't have the script in front of me. Mm-hmm. I also mentioned, God willing, I wouldn't do it again. And then I asked, finally, what can I do to make things right? How can I make restitution for this? And is there anything I'm leaving out you have to tell me about? You know, lay it on me. And all he said was, I just want to be your friend. Just be my friend. And that was it. So all that, it talks about in our book, and I got to point this out, all the hours squandered over these resentments, all that anger we were holding on to, you know, all that build up, just for nothing. Mm-hmm. You know, we really don't, not only do we not know how much harm we've really done when we were out, it's like, we really don't know if this, like what the result of the amends is going to be. And mind you, I've been called an asshole when I've made amends. You know, I've been told, like, the truth. And sometimes it's the truth, you know, of what I did, and sometimes it's not what I want to hear. But now I have this program of action where I can make things right, because, honestly, I'd rather get the closure of doing damage to somebody and being told the truth than holding on to that guilt, knowing the harms I've done to somebody. That's just me, and that's from my own experience. And really, until you go through this work, this is something you probably won't get with, because you haven't had that experience with making the proper amends. But from my experience, I'd rather be living this work than be living on self-will. So with that said, I'm pretty much going to be in the book for the rest of the time I'm here. You know, I just really wanted to give you that outline of what it kind of looks like to go through this step work and what the process kind of looks like in flesh. But from this point on, I'm probably going to go from page 82 throughout the book and then restart to the beginning of the book, and like I would do with the sponsee. You know, on page 82... it starts talking about, really 81, but our design for living is not a one-way street. It is good for the wife and for the husband. I'm just going to really just generalize a lot of the things here. Just, if we have no such complication, there's plenty we should do at home. Sometimes we hear an alcoholic say the only thing he needs to do is to keep sober. Had this, bottom of that paragraph, had this not been so, many of us would have no homes today, would perhaps be dead. Okay, that kind of makes sense in a different way of the way I was trying to go with it, but, so two rules. I will never tell somebody to make amends for something I've never made amends for. I will never tell somebody to go to any lengths I've never gone, because that is wrong. Like, I've had sponsees push me to make amends they've never done to my sponsees, and I've seen kids fold and go out because of it. Now, mind you, they may have not been done, you know, but honestly, those kids weren't at a point to be willing to go make some of these amends, and I just don't feel it's right, because no sponsor has ever asked me to do anything they have not done. Two, the other rule I have is that my first rule of thought was just off the bat, whoever you're living with, you're making amends to. Because you're going to start living those amends and making things right, whether it be a roommate, whether it be a girlfriend, whether it be your family, whether it be your kids, like off the bat. Again, from my own experience, that's what I did, and that's what had to be done for me to even stay sober, because, dude, well, let's keep reading. The alcoholic is like a tornado roaring his way through the lives of others. Hearts are broken. Sweet relationships are dead. Affections have been uprooted. Selfish and inconsiderate habits have been kept the home in turmoil. We feel a man is unthinking when he says that sobriety isn't enough. He is like the farmer who came up out of the cyclone cellar to find his home ruined. To his wife, he remarked, "Don't see anything the matter here, Ma. Ain't it grand the wind stopped blowing?" I mean, dude, and it talks about to the wives, man. We just, as an alcoholic, we'll make people we live with sick. You know, going into like the whole Al-Anon thing. We really don't know how much damage we have done. So just right off the bat, honestly, if you're not willing to make amends to some of these people you're living with, I mean, why are you living with them? If you're not willing to go to those lengths to make things right and start living this work, I mean, I don't understand up until this point everything I've asked you to not only write about, but some of the, just like that alone, I feel like at this point, if you're holding on to old ideas, you know, you're not done. This is really it. You still think you have power, going back to the first step, you know, and you think you have power. I mean, that doesn't necessarily mean you're about to just go straight out, but you're probably still willing to live on self-will and good luck, because I can't help you at that point. Funny story, when I was first going through my fourth step, I was told to read steps 10 and 11, and I thought steps 10 started on page 83 and ended on 88, but it's actually 84 to 88, so it was cool. I was, at the first couple months of going through my work, it was like, these three paragraphs are pretty cool on page 83 right here, at the top three. There's a long period of reconstruction ahead. We must take lead. A remorseful mumbling that we are sorry won't fill the bill at all. We ought to sit down with the family and frankly analyze the past as we now see it, being very careful not to criticize them. Their defects may be glaring, but the chances are that our own actions are partly responsible, so we clean house with the family, asking each morning in meditation that our Creator show us the way of patience, tolerance, kindliness, and love. We're kind of at that point where it's like, so it's like steps 1, 2, and 3, we're kind of doing it on the couch. You know, we really could just do it on the couch, you know. Steps 1 are deep. Believe your power is over alcohol and your life is unmanageable? Yes. Step 1. Step 2. You know, are you willing to believe that there's a power greater than yourself that's not you that could restore you to sanity? Insanity being what's described in step 1. Yes. Okay. Step 2. You know, step 3. Literally get off the couch, get on your knees, and say this prayer. Okay. Step 3. Step 4. We start now. Sit at the kitchen table. That's right. Okay. Done writing. Step 5. Read it off. All right. Step 5 done. Step 6 and 7, you know, pretty much, dude, just go back to the couch and reflect for an hour and a half. Ask some of these questions that are outlined in the book. It just, you know, if you can get with it, then let's move on to 8. Step 8, let's sit down and keep writing. You know, all the harm, the people there you have to make restitution to. But now, finally, step 9, we're literally leaving the house for the first time. You know, now we're actually going forth and taking some actions to, you know, make things right. And, you know, and the rest of the steps are really just about living. You know, actually doing this and taking actions on a daily basis. So, bottom of 83, on the top of 84, the 9th step promises. I forgot to point out, I was trying to point out a lot of the promises that was laid out in steps 4, 5, and now 9, because it's like, when I first came in here, you know, in the area I got sober, and they would read off the 9th step promises at the end of the meetings, at some of these discussion meetings I would go to. And I thank God for that, because, you know, some other meetings would call them the 12 step promises. And man, it's like, it's almost like if I didn't hear there were like positive things of going through this step work, I would never have done it. You know, what's the point of going through this humbling experience if I'm not getting anything out of it? You know, why should I take a moral inventory? Why do I have to apologize to anybody? You know, they owe me. You know, why do I have to go to these lengths to do anything if I'm just going to be in more pain? It just seems stupid. But I bring up the promises in the earlier steps because nobody was talking about how in this book they really say there's promises for every step. You know, and by taking every step, we actually get results. And man, the area got sober and nobody was pointing that out. So once, and actually, to the point where I had this fifth step experience, I had a lot of secrets, I had a lot to hide, so once I dumped that to my sponsor, it felt so freeing, and I felt retarded. is absolutely nobody else could relate to that experience of all those fifth-step promises coming true. I honestly, so I never really shared about them. I'd share about how, like, how cool the steps were, but nobody would, I couldn't, no one could relate to, like, me describing really the fifth-step promises. So I like to just point it out, just if nobody knew. And I try to bring it up as much as I can, because there's a lot of fun to be had here, and let's talk about that. So this brings us to step 10, which suggests we continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. We vigorously cleaned up the past. We've entered the world of the spirit. Our next function is in understanding and effectiveness. This is not an overnight matter. It should continue for a lifetime. Okay, here are some directions. Continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. Okay, that's one. When these crop up, we ask God to remove them. That's two. We discuss them with someone immediately and make amends quickly if we have harmed anyone. That's three and four. Then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. And that's five. Love and tolerance is our code. So that actually gives us directions on how to handle selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. And I will literally take these actions on a daily basis. As far as selfishness go, I'll be honest with you. If I've got a little bit of a lusty thing going, or if I'm being a taker, I'll ask God, please remove the selfishness from me. And I'll reach out to somebody in my network, or my sponsor if it's acting up and it seems like to be a persistent thing and I have to keep doing it. We discuss them with someone immediately and make amends quickly if harmed anyone. Bounce it off. It's kind of like hence a 10th step. You know, make sure I've done no harm. And if I've done harm, make amends right there and then as soon as possible. Then it's not necessarily that we go out immediately and try to help somebody else, but we at least make the effort to think about somebody else and their problems. You know, that's the directions for a 10th step right there. All right. Now, the 10th step promises. And we cease fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol. For this time, sanity will have returned. We seldom be interested in liquor. If tempted, we recoil from it like a hot flame. We react sanely and normally, and we will find that this has happened automatically. We feel as that we are an attitude toward liquor has been given us without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. That is the miracle of it. We are not fighting it. Neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we had been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We have not sworn it off and said the problem has been removed. It does not exist for us. We are neither cocky nor are we afraid. That is our experience. That is how we react so long as we keep in fit spiritual condition. It is easy to let up on a spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels. We are headed into trouble if we do, for alcohol is a subtle foe. We are not cured of alcoholism. What we really have is a daily reprieve contingent on our maintenance of our spiritual condition. Every day is a day when we must carry a vision of God's will into all our activities. How can I best serve thee? Thy will, not mine, be done. These are the thoughts which must go constantly. We exercise our will along all we wish. It is the proper use of the will. These promises to me is what it looks like to be in a recovered state. So let's break this down. And we've ceased fighting anything and anyone. So, again, I'm powerless over alcohol and our lives have become unmanageable. So this is a promise for the first half of the first step. You know, by this time, sanity has returned. You know, this delusion that I'm able to drink like a normal person and that one day I will be able to get this is now gone. You know? Okay, now this other paragraph. What we really have is a daily reprieve contingent on maintenance of our spiritual condition. Every day is a day we must carry our vision of God's will into our activities. How can I best serve thee? Thy will not mine be done. Again, promise based upon the second half of the first step, that our lives have become unmanageable. You know, it's not like, I feel like people can just do the steps, and like they did the steps. You know, they may have done a four-step and fifth-step at some point. You know, they may started or even finished making their amends, but they're not sponsoring anybody. They're not trying to expand their relationship with God, and they're not doing, like, spot-check inventories. And they're really not trying to make any maintenance at all. And it's like it says here, and they rest on their laurels being past actions, you know? The only comment I will make here, because I gotta have an opinion at some point, is that I almost feel like when people talk about being recovering, it's almost like you're inferring that there's any, like, there's something else to come. Like, there's something more than, like, what I just, like, kind of explained to you. Like, if anything, being recovered, like, this is what it looks like to be a recovered state. Nothing anymore. It's not like you became Jesus Christ or something, you know. At this point, it's just, like, you're not obsessed. You're not fighting over the thought of alcohol. But now you have a daily reprieve to, you know, to deflate your ego and keep spiritually fit. Page 86, step 11. So starting from that top paragraph, when we retire now at night, we constructively review our day. Were we resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid? Do we owe an apology? Have we kept something to ourselves which should be discussed with another person at once? Were we kind and loving towards all? What could have we done better? Were we thinking of ourselves most of the time, or were we thinking of what we could do for others, of what we could pack into the stream of life? But we must be careful not to drift into worry, remorse, or morbid reflection, for that would diminish our usefulness to others. Mm-hmm. After making our review, we ask God's forgiveness and inquire what corrective measures should be taken. So, up until that last sentence, you know, I will ask these questions at night. I will literally look at the book and ask myself, was I resentful? Was I selfish, dishonest, or afraid? Sometimes I hesitate with it, but I will say no, or off of memory at that point of the night. I will see if I have to bring anything up to somebody tomorrow, and I'll ask myself, was I more of a taker today, or was I more of a giver? And I honestly will say I'm usually both, but some days I'm not as much as a giver as others, but I'm always thinking about myself. Mm. And I also took a little bit of a note here. You must be careful of not to drift into worry, remorse, or morbid reflection. Mm. So I will read that, and I have little notes to the side here. Just the opposite, you know. So I'll be content. I'll be forgiving and forgive. And I'll take some wholesome reflection and look upon, like, what good things I've done for the day. And I will literally say, God, forgive me, and show me how to make corrective measures at night. I wake up the next morning. On awakening, let's think about the 24 hours ahead. I will think about, what do I have to do today? We consider our plans for today. Before we begin, we ask God to direct our thinking, especially divorced of self-pity, dishonest, self-seeking motives. I will literally say out loud, God, direct my thinking and divorce me from any self-pity, dishonest, self-seeking motives. Under these conditions, we can employ mental fallacies with assurance, for after all, God gave us his brains to use. Our thought life will be placed in a much higher place when our thinking is clear to wrong motives. In thinking about our day, we may face indecision. We may not be able to determine which course to take. Here we ask God for inspiration. God, give me inspiration. An intuitive thought or decision. God, give me intuitive thought or decision. I honestly, these next two paragraphs, my sponsor just pointed these out to me probably weeks ago that I should be doing these too. We relax and take it easy. We don't struggle. We are often surprised how the right answers come after we have tried this for a while. Being still inexperienced and having made conscious contact with God, it is not probable that we are going to be inspired at all times. We might pay for this presumption in all sorts of absurd actions and ideas. Nevertheless, we find that our thinking will, as time passes, be more and more on the plane of inspiration. We come to rely upon it. Okay, so when you're freaking out, I try to pause. This is something I've only been doing for like 2 weeks, so I can't say. I may have done it like once or twice. I'll just mm-hmm. be honest there. We usually conclude the period of meditation with a prayer to be shown all throughout the day what our next step to be, that we be given whatever we need to take care of such problems. We ask especially for freedom of self-will and careful to make no requests to ourselves only. We may ask ourselves, however, if others will be helped. Again, directions there, say it out loud, you know, after taking a second to be like, okay, just, you know, what am I supposed to do here? We are careful to never pray for our own selfish ends. Many of us have wasted a lot of time doing that. It doesn't work. You can easily see why. Again, just this idea of now being a giver and not a taker. As we go out through the day, we pause when agitated or doubtful, and ask God for the right thought or action. And we constantly remind ourselves we're no longer running the show, humbly and asking ourselves many times each day, "Thy will be done." I will say, "Thy will be done" throughout the day, just randomly, really. We are then in much less danger for excitement, fear, anger, worry, self-pity, and foolish decision. Now, some 11 step promises. We become much more efficient. We do not tire so easily, for we are not burning up energy foolishly as we did when we're trying to arrange life to suit ourselves. It works. It really does. We outclocks are disciplined. So we let God discipline us in the simple way we have outlined. Faith without works is dead. There's a lot of directions there, and I try to take them. I'm not 100% with it, but it's very useful stuff. The current sponsor I have was the one that really emphasized this. And my sponsor is very about 10, 11, and 12. My last sponsor was really about 12. And this is in the first sentence on page 89 of chapter 7, Working with Others, is really the reason why. Practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with alcoholics. You know, I got to be working steps 10, 11, and 12. I can't just be doing 12, and I can't just be doing steps 10 and 11. Let me rephrase that. I know what it's like to kind of just do 12, and I've definitely been introduced to 10 and 11. And it's like, it's a package deal. That's all I'll really say on that. The rest is just whatever. I'm getting bored with the way I'm talking, so I'm trying to think how to approach this. So working with others, look, I was in early sobriety when I started writing. I wasn't really even sober when I did my first fifth step. So I've had the opportunity, I really take initiative to work with early sobriety wet drunks. So, and I've had a lot of experience with working with early sobriety wet drunks. So I try to I'm not necessarily a result of the 12-step call, but due to the fact I feel like I've had my own experiences with working with the steps in early sobriety, I try to do a lot of 12-step work and 12-step calls with wet drunks. So with working with others, it's a lot of direction. All I'll say is that I like to hear what they have to say to get an idea of what it is to be alcoholic more than anything. I know guys that will just set them up on steps 1, 2, and 3 without even questioning whether they're alcoholic or not. I know guys that will just parade questions to an alcoholic who has absolutely no idea what an alcoholic is, and they will just keep nodding their head, having absolutely no idea what it means to be an alcoholic. I really don't. I mean, everybody is in their own state of alcoholism, and everybody has their own truth. So I'm not really there sitting down trying to hear, like, you know, and I'm not going to tell somebody, oh, you're definitely not an alcoholic. I can't relate to anything you're saying. But I like to hear their insanity, and if I'm able to relate to it, I'll point out some of the alcoholic tendencies I heard in their story. I mean, and there's some really nice directions here on what to do if an alcoholic's unwilling, period. If an alcoholic's unwilling after being qualified, if he is willing, if he thinks he could manage his own drinking still. And it's very useful if you ever, other than just going to your sponsor and asking about how to sponsor, definitely try it. And if he's not taking, or she's not taking you through these next few chapters thoroughly, I mean, just take your time to read all of them. The last thing I will say with working with others is that it talks about in the last couple pages that we don't have to hide from drinking anymore. Mm-hmm. If we have a legitimate reason to be somewhere, like, go for it. I mean, I had, like, one. So there was, like, one group of kids I used to get high and drunk with that I cut off. There was, like, a 3-month period I was using with them. They weren't alcoholic. Like, the ones that are alcoholic are not there anymore. They're going through their ism. But, like, there wasn't enough time for me to, like, burn that bridge But I cut them off before, like, I was able to, like, do any damage. So they were still reaching out to me up until this point of my sobriety. So with that said, they'd always try to have parties, and honestly, I'd always say no. But it got to a point where, because I was being asked so much, because they still thought I was, like, friends with them, and they were friends. They were very nice to me, and they came in at a very awkward point. You know, once every, like, 3 months, I'll go to one of their parties just to be of service and just to show up. You know, because, like, and I'll show up early so I can actually have conversations with them before they get drunk. You know, and I'm talking to the paint. And I'll leave early just because, I don't know. As far as to wives, to the family afterwards, to the employers, and a vision for you, I've had some audacity, because I will go out of my way and reach out to people I know, like parents of, like, siblings I grew up with that have older siblings that are going through addiction, and I've actually gone through the process to give my number out to them, to give it to their addict son or daughter, and if asking if they need help or they're interested in staying sober, please reach out to me. And shockingly, some of them have. And actually, some of them started writing. You know, so go figure. So I try to be of service when I can. I really try to keep the anonymity to a DL, unless I know I could help somebody in the process. Like, there's no Facebook whatever with me, you know, put in any, like, inspirational quotes or anything. But I will reach out to kids that I know that, like, through the woodwork, that may know me. Like, and I heard they ended up in an Oxford house out in West Long Branch, and I'll reach out to them and say, I know some guys out there, you know, if you want some help with the whole sober thing, please reach out to me. Let me know what's good. And, I'll just quickly point out some things with the wives. I like the doctor's opinion. It has, like, I think 5 types of alcoholics defined. To wives has a really good description of, like kind of a stages of what, like, of, like, alcoholics. It doesn't really talk about, like, this idea of a problem drinker or anything. It's kind of like, you know, it talks about the heavy drinker. It talks about the husband that's showing lack of control. The next husband, husband three, has gone much farther than husband two, and then husband four, who's, like, nuts, who's in complete despair. And it actually takes a few pages to talk about, like, what it looks like for the progression of those 4 types of alcoholics to get sober. I just want to point out the 4th alcoholic, he's violent or appears definitely sane when drunk. You know, they have 1 paragraph describing what the recovery looks like. You would suppose that men in the 4th classification would be quite hopeless, but that is not so. Many of Alcoholics Anonymous were like that. Everybody had given them up. Defeat seemed certain, yet often such men had spectacular and powerful recoveries. So, like, there's just people in Alcoholics Anonymous who are gonna, like, everybody who's bottom looks different. I think that's the key there, because I hear people talk about, oh, I was homeless, I was gay, you know, all this. Like, describing that is what would make them alcoholic. But no, we all have that same internal bottom. It describes only 1 jumping off point. The point where we can see our lives with or without alcohol. What it looks like externally is going to be completely different to everybody else. You know what I mean? But I like how it says, even when it seems like the most, like, it doesn't say this, but with that 1 paragraph, it pretty much says everybody has some amount of hope to get this. Nobody's not totally written off. You know, anybody can get this. They just need to get to that jumping off point and get into the work. I'll also point out on page 120, this last paragraph. We never, never try to arrange a man's life so as to shield him from temptation. The slightest disposition on your part to guide his appointments or affairs so he will not be tempted will be noticed. Make him feel absolutely free to come and go as he likes. Again, it's like, this is coming from the perspective of talking to a wife of an alcoholic. You could also take every one of these later chapters and put in perspective a sponsor dealing with a sponsee. But It's really talking about, you know, with working with a wet drunk or any drunk at all, it's like, don't waste your time trying to take away their bottom. And continuing on, this is important. If he gets drunk, don't blame yourself. God has either removed your husband's liquor problem or he hasn't. If not, it had better be found out right away. Then you and your husband can get rid of right down the fundamentals. If a repetition is to be prevented, place the problem alongside everything else in God's hands. Sorry. You're either recovered or you're not. I don't think there's anything else to be said there. You either had the spiritual experience, had an awakening as the result of these steps, or you haven't. You know, and I'm not going to say you're still sick and suffering. I'm going to say you're vulnerable, though. You know, the odds are against you, man. And it's just on page 121. So, to you out there who may soon be with us, we say good luck and God bless you. You know. As far as the family afterwards, again, I'm getting bored of how I'm doing this. So, on page 133, it just talks about health, some outside issues. You know, 134 talks a little bit about sex relations on, like, literally sex issues. 135, it talks about a little bit about untreated alcoholism in the family dynamic and just how unstable some alcoholics at the unrecovered point are. To employers, I forget what I highlight in here, but... pretty much two employers is talking about approaching an employer of an alcoholic. It really just kind of gives you a good description of how if you're not an alcoholic, you will not understand another alcoholic. It just is so foreign to you. It will not make sense no matter how much you try to describe that to them. As far as the vision for you goes, I'll just bring it up to my favorite point on page 164 on that, the first full paragraph. Still, you may say, but I will not have the benefit of contact with you who write this book. We cannot be sure. God will determine that, so we must remember that your reliance is always upon him. He will show you how to create the fellowship you crave. I like that paragraph the first time I read it, because I could use that as poke to be like, ha, there wasn't meetings when like the first 100 were around, so you couldn't be a meeting maker. But honestly, there's a much better point there. And I've had this promise come true because I am really young. There's not a lot of young people that come into Alcoholics Anonymous and stay in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I got to be honest with you, just about every guy in my network, except for one, it's me and this one other guy, and everybody else in our network is either our sponsor or our sponsees. You know, it's like we have other guys who have also gone through the work. But notice how I keep talking about, like, gone through the work. You know, they've had that awakening, they've had that experience, and a fellowship that I crave has grown around me. You know, guys that are young but are really into this work is awesome. And the only way it got to that point, as it says at the end of here, God will determine that, so you must remember that your reliance is always upon him. So as long as you have faith in something greater than yourself and you take actions to, you know, help the world and seek God's will, you know, the fellowship you crave will come. So, that's probably my favorite promise in the 164. Just because I honestly, that's the promise that's come to life for me the most, I think is the best way of putting it. I will briefly describe how I do every chapter, and I will be done. As far as the first edition, the forward to the first edition goes, I just really get into the first paragraph that talks about being in a recovered state, you know, and just again over and over repetition. Even with working with others, we've recovered. Either you're recovered or you haven't. The second edition, I mean, at this point, going through a work with a sponsee, they'll probably have a little bit more interest in looking in and looking at the history of Alcoholics Anonymous, just to kind of check out where it all started from. We get into the doctor's opinion, and I show him the five types of alcoholics, and I also point out the whole, and talk about not only the allergy, but the perception change, and what we, you know, we look for the effect that drugs and alcohol produce for us, and talk about the allergy, and once we start, we can't stop. As far as Bill's story goes, that's by this point, my sponsor's on 10, 11, and 12. So we get the Bill's story, and I'm really not taking them through Bill's story as a sense of taking them through Bill's story as a historical standpoint, but it's a great outline of a qualification, and I show them, it really is, because the first 8 pages are his progression. You know, the last 4 pages of that, those first, the second, so it's first 4 pages, second 4 pages, third 4 pages, the fourth 4 pages. You know, second 4 pages is like, it's talking about the hopelessness and that jumping off point. The third, fourth 4 pages is talking about just the program of action, the 12 steps, and talking a lot about the perception of God and, who are you to say there's a God and not just a higher power? And the last 4 pages is talking about service. There's a solution. I forget the page, but the first half of there is a solution is talking about the allergy. The second half is talking about the obsession and the insanity. At this point, I'm just really asking, how can you relate to all these points? You know, more about alcoholism. I'm taking through my sponsee the 4 stories that are laid out about more about alcoholism. You know, can you relate to this? How can you relate to this? Do you have a story that you could relate to this with? And as far as we agnostics go, I point out the bedevilments. You know, can you feel on these bedevilments? You know, and do you have a description of your own words, how these feelings? We highlight the part about the higher power, and I point out at this point, just like pretty much at this point, I just ask them, "What do you think about steps 1, 2, and 3?" I don't know how you feel about them at this point. You're like, "What was it like before?" You know, and what is it like now? I really try to show, give them. Open up sections of the book and just talk to them, see how they relate to it, because now they have, from my experience, it's like once you go through this work, no matter how cryptic it is, no matter how 1939 language it is, it like makes sense, because now it's not necessarily because it makes sense, but instead of reading this like the talking about God and these experiences, like now you can relate to all of this. You know, now it makes sense to you because it's happened to you, and you kind of feel where they're coming from, and you see what they're talking about. Yeah, I have nothing to close with. That's all I got. That's all it would take somebody through the book. So, thank you.
Thank you.